This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Don Webster is a journalist and author, a former senior editor at Outside Magazine. He now writes for National Geographic Magazine, Smithsonian, Best Life, Vanity Fair, The New York Times Magazine. He's also the author of Aftermath, The Remnants of War, The Burma Road, and Babylon by Bus. I am honored to welcome to the studio Don Webster. Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Bumping along, you know.
And let me add, too, also a star of local community theater, the Black Box Players, most recently seen as the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz.
That's true. Before that was Captain Von Trapp. I do that because I try to learn something new every year. And about 18 months ago, I decided that the thing, because it's really smart, important, I think, to remind yourself that you don't know everything and that you're not all that smart as you think you are. So I always try to learn something new. And thus far, the only thing I haven't liked was snowboarding. but I did this because my kids were interested in the theater, and it's been a lot of fun. I've got little, you know, I've got kids who are 7 years old who I consider sort of colleagues and friends. It's really kind of cool.
Are they seven now? My gosh.
Little kids who are in the play. My kids are 12 and 14.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they're still doing it, and they like it, and they're friends their age, and it's just cool. It's a kind of nice little community of people.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the Black Box Players, you got any plans to, are you auditioning for any future productions?
I was just yoked into being Mr. Salt in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory coming up. I got back from this last trip, and I got a call from the director saying that they had an opening. So
there you go. And the reliable Don Webster.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
The phone lines are open at 977-1070 at any time. If you've got a question for Don, feel free to give us a call. Don, I know a question that you get quite a lot, especially here in Charlottesville. You know, in L.A., everybody's working on a screenplay. Right. It seems in Charlottesville, everybody's working on a novel. I'm sure you get this question a lot, but tell us how you got into writing, a very successful writing career, really is. And what's your usual answer to folks when they're seeking that advice?
I got really lucky, actually. I studied to go to medical school and be a doctor, and then realized that's not what I wanted to do, and I really liked reading and writing. And I took an independent study, and my professor at college said, you know, you should really send some of these stories off. They're good. Which mostly comes from reading a lot. You learn what's good by reading other people's stuff. And I sent them to The New Yorker, and The New Yorker liked them a lot. So I was sort of off to the races. It was kind of crazy. And then my editor at The New Yorker, Chip McGrath, who was the fiction editor, went over to be nonfiction. And he sort of took me with him. So I've never had a journalism course. I've learned as I went along. My wife went to Missouri Journalism. So when I really have a thorny issue, I go to her.
Tell us about your work at Outside, because when you were at Outside Magazine, you really were one of the folks on that team that took it from a sort of a small, with a cult following, mm-hmm. a niche publication, to really unbelievable mainstream success.
Yeah, it is a success story. That was an interesting time. I had started a magazine called Southern Magazine with Linton Weeks from the Washington Post. And it had been bought by Time Inc., so I went to work for Outside. And at Outside, there was a really intelligent group of people. Dan Coyle, Marshall Sellid, Rob Story, Mark Bryant, the editor-in-chief. And together, just the knowledge base that was there. Dan just did that book called Lance Armstrong's War. Really smart guys, like to work hard, like to have fun. And the group of us, we just brought, somehow it all just, somehow it came together in such a way, like a good team or something, where everybody knew they could hand off to another, and everybody, it was really fun, among other things. And yeah, with the help of people like Randy White and Tim Cahill and John Krakauer, we took it to the next level, whatever that is.
We're talking with journalist and author Don Webster. When did you start writing for National Geographic? Because I know you do and have done quite a bit of work for them.
Yeah.
Your name appears quite frequently in the magazine. When did you start? What was your first assignment? Do you remember the call that you got?
I do. Actually, I was closing a story about it. We'd floated for the Gulf Stream for a week. I was writing for The New Yorker and for Outside then. And I had two stories were closing on the same day, which means that there's constantly fact checkers and editors calling, re-verifying stuff and saying, well, this person says that, and you finesse a way to fix it in the text. And I was in a terrible mood about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the phone rings. And I said, okay, what is it now? And it was the editor of National Geographic. And he called me. I was like, you got a minute? And I was like, I'm closing two stories. And, an editor of mine at The New Yorker had given him my name to do a story. And from that, we hit it off really well. From there, they kept me busy for about 10 years nonstop.
And you really did. You went all over the world.
Yes.
And have been all over the world. And I'm sure you are yet to go out to different places in the world. Does that get tiring? I mean, does it get, or do you always sort of look forward to the next journey?
Generally, you look forward to it. Once in a while, I got dengue fever in India in July, and I came home sick, and I thought, I'll never go to India again. And of course, I just got offered a private plane trip, private jet trip around India with my dad for free. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll go back to India after all. But it's always fun. You know, the worst part is exploring the guilt leaving home. Once I'm away and I'm able to call home and things like that, so everything, I know everything's okay. It's fun. It's just a riot. You meet amazing people and have amazing experiences, many of which don't get written up. There's just not enough room. But I think of all the people now I know that I draw a lot of inspiration from around the world. And something, you know, I was just telling a friend today, little Yanomamo man, way back in the jungles, 200 miles from the nearest unpaved road in where Venezuela and Brazil come together. And I asked him, what do you want for your people? And he said, I want what all men want. I want to be able to know the future, and then I want to be able to change it. And I thought, that's the smartest thing anybody's ever said to me.
Don Webster writes for National Geographic, Smithsonian, Vanity Fair, New York Times Magazine, you name it. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. I want to talk to you about some of those experiences. But first, explain to us the nuts and the bolts of writing an article for National Geographic. When you're out on the road, do you have a laptop? Do you have a pad of paper? Do you start writing on the plane on the way home? How many words? How does it work?
Well, they send you out with a contract, and they say, basically, we want this many words, and we'll pay you this much, and it's due 12 weeks after you get back or 8 weeks after you get back. And I take a notebook and a tape recorder and a laptop because I never know how it's going to start coming out. It just does. And I'll interview people, and you get to a place where you sort of know what you're talking about, and then you begin to try to put it together in your own words. And sometimes, it takes a glass of champagne in the business class on the way home. Sometimes it starts in the middle of it. I did a piece for Smithsonian where I walked the Bataan Death March, and after I got home, re-interviewed guys who'd done it. And I was already writing by the time I was halfway done because it was strangely, profoundly affecting to walk this road that all these men had walked 60 years earlier. And it was time for it to come out.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. What's your most memorable, perhaps the favorite or best assignment that you ever got from a magazine?
That's a hard one. Probably Vanity Fair sent me, with the help of a local psychologist here named Dewey Cornell, to retrace how Lee Malvo became the Washington Sniper. He was from Jamaica, and his mom had abandoned him in Antigua, and these people had all tried to help him, and that's where he met John Muhammad, and that's how he got to America. And I got to retrace his whole trip, meeting with his father in Jamaica and his mother, who didn't like me very much, and all these people along the way who tried to help him and save him as he kept getting serially abandoned. And they were all the most wonderful people. And it was the most easy story to tell because they all loved this kid who turned into a reviled, and they all felt a little guilty about it, but they still couldn't believe it, and they were all in shock. And they were all so honest that it was just... It was such an easy story to write because I loved these people so much. You know, that was probably my favorite. It was just a great story.
How about your least favorite, worst experience out on the road?
Well, I just got back from Africa, which really was although we succeeded, it wasn't my favorite. But probably another Vanity Fair story. I found all these ghost detainees and interviewed them, and then went back to Baghdad, and I interviewed them in Jordan, and then went back to Baghdad.
And when you say ghost detainees, what does that mean?
People who were taken in by not always the army, but other intelligence groups in Iraq, and were not put on the books, and in terms of the way to do things by the Geneva Convention, and were often held in little cells and in ways that were not legal, and eventually they were released. Often after being put through a lot of indignities. And most of them I liked a lot. And then I went to the army and said, well, this is what they've told me. And we went all through Iraq looking for records of these things. And, I've been shelled at Abu Ghraib. I've spent lots of time at Abu Ghraib because that's where a lot of the prison records are. And that was really hard because I actually liked the guys in the army a lot. And I thought they were in a really difficult spot. And yet, they didn't trust me. And yet they knew that I had stuff that they didn't have. It was just this really strange scorpions in a jar thing going on. It was shelling all the time. And yet in the middle of it, every night at supper, you got to walk across the yard at Abu Ghraib, and they begin to just lob shells and stuff over the walls and shoot, and rockets coming in, and you're wearing your body armor and you're walking to dinner. And I said to this Lieutenant Colonel, who Barry Johnson, who I like very much, who's the head of all public affairs there, I said, you know, how do you deal with this? And he goes, well, you know, if it's got your number on it, it's got your number on it. And if it doesn't, you get dinner. And I thought, this is insane.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it was really
life
stressful.
In Iraq.
Yeah, it was really
life
very
and
stressful.
Death in Iraq. Gosh.
Yeah, it was tough.
Journalist and author Don Webster is my guest in studio. What are your thoughts on David Halberstam? Because I know that you knew him, and he of course just recently passed away in a car accident.
I was shocked, actually. I just dropped my son off out of middle school the other day, and I'm driving back in, and I'm NPR, and says David Halberstam's dead, and literally I went no, like that. Wonderful guy, generous guy, genial guy. You know, we were at a book party not all that long ago. Well, this is a funny story, actually. You know, going to play practice or going to soccer or going to ballet when I'm driving the kids and I'm in a deadline and I've got all this stuff in my head I got to get out, and yet I'm doing this thing that everybody should do for their children. And I'm always sitting behind the wheel going, damn it, I bet David Halberstam never had to do this. So he's at a book party. It actually happened to be a party for a book of mine up at Elaine's and in New York. And he was having a couple of scotches. He was a very funny guy that way. He was really gregarious. And I finally said to him, okay, I got a question for you. And I told him this thing, and I said, ending, you know, David Halberstam never had to do this. And he goes, you are wrong. My daughter would, it would just hound me if I had taken my work before her. She always came first, and she made sure she always came first, which I thought was really, it spoke volumes to me about him. He was a great guy. He was a great guy. I already miss him. He'd be encouraging. If you had a good story out, he'd get a note to you somehow, and I'd try to do the same. It was really, it was a nice relationship we had.
We're talking with Don Webster, journalist and author. Speaking of author, I have to tell you, The Burma Road was one of the most interesting. It was one of those books that you have a hard time putting down. And it's not a novel.
Yeah.
But you really have this incredible talent, Don, to take readers anywhere in the world. And you really feel like you're there.
Well, there's a lot of perspiration behind that. That's a great story because nobody knows anything. World War II in South Asia was home of the Flying Tigers, was home of the first long-range penetration troops. Joseph W. Stilwell, fascinating American character. I don't know why he's not an American historic hero. He was supposed to have Eisenhower's job, but he knew Chiang Kai-shek and consequently ended up in backwater of World War II. He planned the North African campaign before he left. I mean, this guy was amazing. And it's just a great story. And again, but I went over there and I interviewed all these people. And then you just try to stay out of the way of the story. I mean, you know, for me, trying to keep the vertical pronoun I out of stuff is really, it's critical to letting readers think that it's coming right through the screen to them and not through my screen to them. And it takes them one step closer to the reality. And that's what you want to do. You want to put, you're writing for them. You're not writing for you, you know, so.
What are you working on now?
Well, a couple different things. I'm trying to get my national security letters because of this detainees thing. I was fairly certain I was investigated, and I want to see if they will release my national security letters to me to see if I was illegally investigated. And if so, that's an interesting story about how and what they could see and how they got that access. And if they did it correctly, well, that's the story too. I mean, you know, let's be fair.
Yeah. You mean the government investigating you based on the journalism that you did about detainees?
Yeah.
In the Middle East.
Yeah. I mean, I know they were on my phones and stuff like that. And I just...
Really?
Yeah, yeah. You can tell. You can tell. Your phones do kind of weird things.
How can you tell? What
did
they do?
I picked up the phone one day, and there were two people talking.
You're kidding.
On my phone. I was like, hello? And then they got really quiet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange...
That's chilling.
It's kind of a strange thing, yeah. And my wife actually makes jokes. We've got this lamp that hangs down in the kitchen, and during that time, she was always talking to the lamp. But, you know, it's goes with the territory, and it's actually... My life when I'm in town is pretty boring. I mean, one of the best kept secrets in town is that I'm like the total house person when I'm home. I don't leave. So it's, you know, it's pretty dull, actually.
Yeah. Anything else you're working on? You have a book in mind? Or?
Well, I may do a book about this. I worked with these, I led these three ultramarathon runners across the Sahara. I just got home from that, actually. It took about 3.5 or 4 months.
And you mean people literally ran
all the way across
the Sahara Desert?
Yeah. And I may do a book about that, but the city, you know, I've got to figure out what that is. And it was not a great trip. It's the first kind of not good trip I've had, although the runners did run every step, and for that, they got to be totally commend it. I mean, it was an epic thing.
But just to follow runners across a desert, that doesn't sound like fun.
It was kind of grindingly boring, actually. I read a lot of books. I got to hang with my friend, the Tuareg leader, Mohammed Iksa, and we watched movies. And it was funny. Every day we'd wrap the car windows and watch movies. The Great Escape. He loved Jackass, the movie. He loved The Great Escape. He loved all the Quentin Tarantino movies. This guy who speaks no English, who speaks Tamshek and a little bit of French, some French, actually. He speaks pretty good French. We would watch movies every afternoon, and he was just fascinated with American films. We'd watch them on my laptop. He thought it was the greatest thing ever.
Don Webster, journalist and author, writes for National Geographic, Smithsonian, Vanity Fair, New York Times Magazine, you name it. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.